Welcome back. It's the Karen Conti Show. If you're just tuning in for the first time, I'm a practicing lawyer. We try to talk about the news events of the week and from a legal perspective, and then taking your calls at 4 o'clock on any legal topic. I'll give you that number now, 312-981-7200. If you'd like to weigh in on anything we're talking about, we always welcome your calls, 312-981-7200. Well, the events this week resulted in, at this point, 52 people being arrested, 5 people dead, numerous people being injured, including 50 police officers. And it had lawyers, and I'm a lawyer, and my colleagues talking and thinking about who's going to be sued, who's going to be prosecuted, for what, how much time are they going to do, what should happen as a result of these things, what laws are there in place to punish people for what happened. And with us to talk about this is David Sklansky. He's a professor at Stanford Law School. He's a graduate of Harvard. He practiced law in Washington, was a federal prosecutor in L.A., and now he works for the Stanford Criminal Justice Center. And welcome to the show, David. Thank you so much for joining me.
Happy to be with you.
So let's get right into it here. Let's start and let's talk about the protesters themselves, the rioters, whatever you want to call them, looters. I don't even know what the word is. I've heard numerous words. But let's just go through some of the crimes that they could be prosecuted for.
Well, it depends what they've done. I mean, just entering the Capitol grounds without authorization is a criminal trespass. And it's a particularly serious trespass because the vice president happened to be there. So that's punishable by up to a year in prison. Disorderly conduct on the Capitol grounds is a misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months. Bringing a gun onto the Capitol grounds is normally punishable by up to 5 years, but if you trespass on the Capitol grounds while the vice president is there and you bring a dangerous weapon with you, that's punishable by up to 10 years in prison.
Wow.
And we're just getting started. There are separate statutes that make it a felony to violently enter the floor of Congress, to steal federal property or records, to access national security information. Assaulting a federal officer is a more serious penalty, a felony punishable by up to 8 years. Bringing explosives into the Capitol is punishable by up to 10 years. Then there are news reports that some of these rioters threatened to kill or kidnap or harm the vice president. The threat alone is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison. If the news report suggesting that some of these individuals were trying to kidnap the vice president or members of Congress is true, that's punishable by up to life in prison. Wow. And then we know that also, tragically, several people lost their lives, which raises the prospect of a manslaughter or murder prosecution.
Let's talk about that. And that was a great rundown of the possible crimes. And I keep thinking to myself, as I do when I watch people commit crimes, and now that they're all on video at some point, did you really think about this? Did you think this through as you were streaming this live from Nancy Pelosi's desk, that what you're doing could land you in jail for the rest of your life, buddy? I don't know what they were thinking about, but I guess that's not my place to think. Let's talk about felony murder. Can you first describe to our listeners, who probably know a little bit about it, but what is felony murder, and does it apply to anything that happened this past week?
Yeah, it might apply. So felony murder is a doctrine that says that if you are taking part in a crime, and during that crime somebody is killed, you can be guilty of murder even if you didn't intend to kill them. And under federal law, that's only true for specified crimes. Not all crimes can serve as the basis for a felony murder prosecution. But one of the crimes that can serve as the predicate for a felony murder prosecution is burglary. And burglary doesn't necessarily mean breaking into somebody's house to steal something. Anytime you enter a structure illegally with the intent to commit a crime inside, that's burglary. So people who entered into the Capitol building with the intent to commit further crimes while they were inside, like damaging federal property or kidnapping a member of Congress, or stealing property. If in the course of committing that crime, somebody is killed, they could conceivably be liable for felony murder.
And I haven't seen any of those charges yet for felony murder, but is it fair to say that the charges that have been brought thus far can always be amended?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, the charges that have been brought so far can be amended or added to with additional charges.
So you were a prosecutor in L.A. for 10 years. Now you're in academics. As a prosecutor, prosecutors, as we know, have lots of discretion. They can choose to prosecute. They can choose not to prosecute, even if a crime has been committed and it's pretty clear. But also the variety of charges that can be brought that you went through, and then what happens after that, whether there is a plea bargain down to something else or whether the case goes to trial and what kinds of sentences are sought. As a prosecutor, how are you thinking about this prosecution on these for these people? Let's leave aside, the president. Let's leave aside some of the things that led to this. But the people who are actually on the premises of the Capitol building, how do you think about this as a prosecutor? What are your goals here?
Well, your goal is to seek justice and make sure that people face the appropriate legal consequences for their actions, as I've suggested, the federal criminal code has a kind of a graduated scheme of penalties that apply depending on the seriousness of an individual's conduct. So prosecutors will be looking to figure out what individual people did, what they should be held accountable for, because some people may just have trespassed. Other people may have trespassed bringing a weapon. Other people may have brought explosives in. Other people may have conspired to kidnap a member of Congress. And depending on the severity and gravity of the conduct of a particular individual, that will determine what charges are appropriate.
You know, I've never prosecuted, and I've defended myself. I have been a defense lawyer in cases. And, I hear that prosecutors want to deter, and that's one of the reasons that they can make the decisions they do, or at least that's one of the stated reasons. I mean, to me, I would want to prosecute these people to deter others from doing it, because as much as it seemed like the thing to do, and you have a president who's, egging you on, if not inciting you altogether, and you think it's okay to do this, this has to set a precedent. And I just want to say, David, last night I was with some friends and I had somebody who say, well, you know what, it was worse what the looters did because they ruined a lot of businesses and it caused millions of dollars of damage. And I say, well, maybe there was more economic loss when we had all that looting that happened after George Floyd, but this is different. It's not better or worse. It's apples and potatoes, because going into a government building, I mean, these are our sacred buildings. This is where our officers, this is where the law gets made. This is what our foreign policy is devised and implemented. You can't let people go into our government building and threaten people. And something has to deter people from doing this again. Is that something that a prosecutor is going to be thinking about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And a lot of property damage was done. I mean, I don't know if you looked at any of the videos that have been posted about the invasion and the rioting that took place inside the halls of Congress, but it's quite frightening, and a lot of damage was done. I don't know how much, I don't think anybody knows at this point what the total dollar amount of the damage is going to be, but I also think you're right that the property damage is not the only thing that needs to be taken into account here, because this was an invasion of the halls of our national legislature, the seat of American democracy, and it was on a day particularly important to American democracy when the results of a presidential election were being ratified and certified. And in fact, the invasion had the apparent aim of obstructing and interfering with one of the core processes of American democracy. So it wasn't just a property offense. It was threatening people.
Yeah.
Five people lost their lives. And it was aimed also at our American democracy.
David Sklansky, can you hold with me? I'm going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk more about the legalities of what happened this week. You're listening to WGN. We're breaking down the legalities of what happened at the Capitol with David Sklansky, who is a professor of law at Stanford. Thank you for holding, David. We talked about the protesters and we talked about the rioters and what the possible crimes might be and the possible sentences. And let's turn our attention to what Donald Trump said and what he did. And I'm going to try to keep this non-political. I try not to be political on this show. I try to break down as rationally as I can so you can make your own decision about what's right and wrong here. But David, from what you've seen so far, are there possible charges against Donald Trump for what he said and what he did relating to this?
I think it would be tough to prosecute him criminally for the speech that he gave in front of the White House before the rioters stormed Capitol Hill. But I think it's almost certainly grounds for impeachment. The reason why it'd be hard to prosecute him criminally is that inciting violence can be a crime, but it requires the intent that the people you're speaking to will commit a crime. And under the First Amendment, it requires that your words be calculated to spur imminent violence. And Trump's words, I don't think, were explicit enough to serve as the basis for a criminal conviction for incitement under the First Amendment.
Let's just give an example here. If Donald Trump had said what, how would that have fallen into what incitement is under the law?
If he had said, "I want you to go up to the Capitol and break in and ransack the place," that would be incitement. It would be aiding and abetting the trespass, aiding and abetting the disorderly conduct, aiding and abetting the interruption with democratic processes. But because his words were vaguer, because he said, you need to fight, you need to be strong, we're not going to take back our country with weakness, it's harder to argue that these were words that were calculated to spur imminent violence. And that his intent was to do that.
And
so
there
that's
was,
why it'd be...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
So that's why it'd be tough, I think, to convict him criminally. Although I should say we don't know all the facts. And it could turn out that there is a basis for a criminal prosecution there.
It doesn't matter. There's two other things that I want to weigh in on that I want you to weigh in on. And does this affect the issue of incitement? And that is, number one, he's the president. If I said this, no one would listen to me at all. But he's the president, and he is the highest in the executive branch in our country and the leader of the free world. And if he says that, does that have any greater weight when it comes to incitement? And then my second question is, there were some words he used after the riots were going on where he said, I love you, you're special, basically calling the people who were involved great patriots. Do those two things have anything to do with whether or not there would be incitement under the law?
Yeah, they might. I mean, they could throw light on his intent, and they could affect how his words would be interpreted, and what effect could reasonably be expected from his words. But I think the bigger significance of that is of the fact that he's president is that we need to think about impeachment also, and the grounds for impeachment are high crimes and misdemeanors under the Constitution, and that doesn't mean that's a term of art. It means a serious abuse of office. And it's hard to think of a more serious abuse of office than urging your supporters to ignore the lawful results of an election. And then to say things that lead them to storm the Capitol and afterwards to express your approval and affection for them, even if that doesn't constitute an incitement that could be prosecuted in an ordinary criminal court, it's a serious abuse of the office of the president, and so it's a basis for impeachment.
And as we know from Impeachment 101 that we got last year when we watched the impeachment and then the trial last January, this about around this time, it was a political process. It was voted along party lines, and you're right, there is no clear term. High crimes and misdemeanors means whatever the government wants to say is a high crime and misdemeanor, and you're right. I agree with you that this would certainly qualify for that. Let's explain quickly the 25th Amendment. We've been hearing people talk about it. It's never been utilized in the way we're talking about using it. Tell me briefly what has to happen for the 25th Amendment to take effect and what happens as a result of invoking it.
The vice president and a majority of the cabinet would have to write to Congress that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. When they did that, the vice president would automatically become president.
Okay.
Now, President Trump could contest this, there's a process that would then involve Congress adjudicating whether the vice president was correct and the cabinet was correct or the president was correct, but the clock would run out before that happened. So for practical purposes, what the 25th Amendment means today is that if the vice president and a majority of the cabinet write to Congress and say the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, then Vice President Pence would become president until President-elect Biden is sworn in later this month.
And if that were to happen, President Trump could run for president again in 4 years, correct?
Yes. If he's disqualified through the 25th Amendment, he can run for president again.
But if he were impeached and convicted, the Senate could invoke a part of the punishment that he couldn't run for office. Is that right?
That's correct.
So that would be a reason for the impeachment rather than the 25th.
Well, they're not necessarily mutually exclusive.
That's right. That's true. That's true. what do you think? And this is a hard one to look into your legal crystal ball here, but do you think that President Trump, first of all, can he pardon himself? That's the question that legal scholars have weighed in on. There's really no precedent for it. There's arguments back and forth. But why don't you give our listeners the basics for the argument for him being able to impeach himself and the arguments against?
Well, the Constitution says the president has the power to pardon. It doesn't explicitly say that he can't pardon himself. So that's the argument that he could do it. The argument that he can't do it is that it would violate the fundamental principle that nobody should be the judge in their own case. And the U.S. Department of Justice has taken the position for decades that the presidential power to pardon doesn't include the ability of a president to pardon himself or herself. So my own view is that it doesn't make any sense to think that a president could pardon himself. There's no reason that the pardon power should be extended that far. And my guess is that courts would find that a self-pardon is not valid.
I agree with you, and I would add one more in my non-academic viewpoint. But if you look at the language, granting a partner pardon is granting has to do with, it connotes, a grantor and a recipient. And even a pardon is kind of implicit in that word, is a giver and a taker, two sides of that. And I heard one pundit say, it's sort of like saying the president can donate his kidneys. Well, Certainly, that means he can donate his kidneys. Donate means from one person to another, but it's illogical to say that that means he can take out his kidney and give it back to himself. So if you look at the true meaning of the words, it wouldn't make sense that he could pardon himself. Have you heard that argument?
I haven't heard the analogy to kidneys, but I like that.
And do you think that there are prosecutions laying in wait for Donald Trump? Let's just say that that he doesn't prosecute, the pardon, his self-pardon doesn't stick, or he doesn't resign and let Pence pardon him. Let's just say that federal crimes are off the table. Who else could prosecute him and for what?
Well, I think that regardless of whether he tries to self-pardon, he is likely, there's a very good chance that he's going to face a criminal prosecution in the state of New York. Even if he could pardon himself, the presidential pardon power doesn't extend to state crimes, so it wouldn't protect him against state prosecutions. And both the district attorney in Manhattan and the New York State Attorney General have active investigations into the activities of the Trump Organization and Trump himself, both before and during his time as president. And as a former federal prosecutor who specialized in fraud, I can tell you that my impression is that Donald Trump's business career is a target-rich environment for fraud prosecutors.
David Skolansky, thank you so much for weighing in and breaking this down for us. David Skolansky is a professor at Stanford, one of my favorite places in the world. Continued success to you, and please come back again and talk to us. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.